Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bezifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, December 27th, 2005. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. In agricultural news, U.S. beef is on the shelves of some, but not all, grocery stores today in Tokyo. Also, USDA Secretary Mike Johanns reacts to last week's $2.7 billion cut in the federal agricultural budget. And renewable energy resources are a focus of both political parties in Canada's upcoming election. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, Don Day will be by with a look at agricultural weather, and Todd Gleason will take a look at time. It's all on the Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this. March wheat at Kansas City, 385 and three quarters, up 5 1/4. March wheat at Chicago, 340, up 5 1/2. May, 349, up 6. March corn, 215 1/2, up 1 1/2. May, 224 1/4, up 1 1/2. July, 232 1/4, up 1 1/2. September, 240 1/4, up 1 3/4. January soybeans settled at 611 1/2, down 1 1/2. March, 623 3/4, down 1 1/4. July, 637 3/4, down 3. November, 635 3/4, up 1/4. January soybean meal, 203.80, up 40. January soybean oil, 20.98, down 30. On the Merck, January feeder cattle, 114.27 1/2, up 20. December live cattle, 94.77 1/2, down 2 1/2. February lean hogs, 64.92 1/2, down 32 1/2 on the day. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne. Looks to me if we take a look at both the Kansas City and the Chicago pits, that over in Kansas City, the funds were extending their long positions, while in Chicago, it looks like maybe they were giving up a few of their short positions today.
Yeah, Dave, like I said, we had the only pit where the funds are really short now is the wheat pit, quite a few shorts there, and they are covering some. I think that they're saying, looking ahead to the first of the year, when the possibility is some of the index funds buying with a few other things going on, just their extensive shorts. And it has been dry out west. Did do a considerable amount of covering again today.
How do we look at the wheat picture from a technical standpoint today?
Well, I mean, of course, it was a good strong close. We're bouncing back a little bit. The funds are running a little bit, and it looks like, you know, we should be in for a little more short covering.
The March corn, 215 1/2, is the close today. We were looking at that 215 as a resistance point this morning. Pushed through, went back. Now it closes above 215. What are the implications?
Well, I think that, when you close above resistance, we're getting near a 100-day moving average of 217. 215 basically becomes support, and 217 becomes our next target.
And the likelihood of you seeing 217 this week?
Oh, I think it's a 50-50 chance, Dave. Closed corn higher, I think, last six trading sessions. Today was actually the seventh straight trading session. I'm sorry. We've worked our way back up, and like I said, we've got a chance of moving on up there for sure. But here again, like I say, if the funds decide to quit covering or doing whatever, well, we can set back, a penny or two. But we're in a pretty tight trading range here. But we keep moving the bottom step up a little bit. And so, you know, 217 is definitely within the cards this week if we see continued buying by people like Iowa Grain, Mann, Cargill, and ABM Anbro like they did today.
Were the weekly export inspections supportive today?
Well, actually, the inspections were not as good as they were hoping for. The report had little impact, really, basically. We had 31 million on the corn, and they were looking for about 37 million. So not that hot as far as the corn went.
In the soybean pit, we see the January contract at 611.5, down 1.5 on the day. The March was down 1.25 on the day. But given the fact that we started off the morning down 7 to 8 cents, it coming off of those lows to finish where they do probably has to give some encouragement to bulls, I would think.
I was going to say, but as you look at those Selman prices, we talk about that they're down, but just talk about how close to the high of the day they were. Quite a close, quite a positive close, in fact, and seeing the corn, the wheat, and the beans all rally into the close showed us a very strong close, and it looked like the funds were buyers of everything the last 15 minutes of the day, Dave.
And it looks like, if I take a look at the basis here, it looks like it was a fairly slow farmer selling day today.
I'm going to say that's a given. Right here today, with no more movement than we had, farmer selling is going to be very quiet between now and the end of the year unless we see a little bit of pop. If we take corn up to, say, 220 basis the March, I think we'll see some farmers selling. Here locally tonight, I think corn is 198 at one elevator, 199 at the other elevator here in our local area. Over $2 corn. We'll move a little bit to corn probably, but the next real movement is going to be when we take it up to where it's $2 net after storage. So we have to maybe go up another 10 cents here to get a lot of corn moving, but we will move some corn on an over $2 mark.
Do you like 249 December 2006 corn for a hedging opportunity?
If you haven't sold anything, yes, I do. I think that's going to be, a place when we're all said and done. Is going to be a good place to have a little bit sold. You know, if you've already started and have some sold a little before this, hang off and we'll try to scale up a little higher. But definitely a place to start if you haven't got started.
Over at the Merkleen, hogs softer today, I guess, in anticipation of what is supposed to be a fairly bearish quarterly hogs and pigs report tomorrow.
Well, that's the indication. Of course, we ended up a little bit that way, but we had a fairly bearish cattle on feed report last week that we didn't react to the numbers as bad as we thought we would. So, but a little bit of precursor to looking at the hog and pig report tells us that, the market told us they felt that those numbers they're expecting should push this market a little easier.
Why did traders push feeder and live cattle higher in light of what we saw on cattle on feed on Friday?
Not totally for sure, but we are seeing some opening up of some markets. Like you talked, some of the shelves in Japan have some American beef on, looking at good consumption over the holidays. I think the retail end of things, we saw the beef movement over the holidays was quite good. We saw a lot more people eating some prime ribs and steaks than usual, and that's a good thing.
Everybody has been talking about the index funds. Are they in the market? Are they not in the market? Of course, our reports don't indicate that because we don't see that in the reports as such, the way the reports are lined out. How will we know if they're in the market or not for sure? And if they are in the market this time like they were a year ago, what is the potential upside in your opinion?
Well, we're not sure how big or how much money they're going to put in, so that's a big question mark. If you knew that they were coming and you knew to what degree, it'd be easy to say we're going to pop a dime, 20 cents, 30 cents, whatever that way, Dave, because they could be in the market, but to what degree are they coming into the market? Are they here to invest $100 million, $200 million, $300 million? That's the big question mark we have out there for them is, it's not whether they will participate. We know there's going to be some index funds for participating after the first year, but to what degree are they going to? They could move the corn a dime easily. They could move the beans 30, 40 cents very easily. But, I mean, we don't know what degree they're going to be coming to the board.
Let me play the devil's advocate and ask you, why do we know that the index funds will be in the market after January 1st?
Well, we've seen they were very, very heavily in the energies. The energies seem to have slowed down, actually backed up the way natural gas acted last week. We will probably see some reallocating because what they do generally is they look at long-term charts and they look to buy things in the lower 20% of where they traded, then get on and ride that until the trend is over. The energies aren't in the bottom 20% anymore, Dave. Neither are the metals. And reallocation says that grains are. So we're looking for the good possibility. We don't know for sure. Nobody's called me and said, oh, yes, by the way, we'll be in, and the index funds are going to do this. We're saying that the probability is very high.
Thank you very much, Wayne, and you have a grand day today.
Thank you, Dave.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. Taking a look at Jay Searle's two-state forecast tonight, mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of light rain. It could be a little bit of a patchy rain. Some dense fog possible, lows in the upper 30s. South winds around 10 miles per hour in the evening, those becoming light. And then tomorrow, cloudy with a 50% chance of rain and highs in the mid-40s. Northeast winds at 10 to 15 miles per hour. In agricultural news, the House and Senate have adjourned the first session of the 109th Congress. The Senate reconvenes on January 18th, and the House resumes work on January 31st. One of the first items on the House agenda is to pass the revised measure dealing with $39.7 billion worth of mandatory budget savings, including $2.7 billion in agricultural program savings over 5 years. The Senate passed the bill before it adjourned, but revised the measure slightly, making House action necessary before it is sent to President Bush. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says the cuts are necessary, even as he acknowledges the financial pickle many producers currently find themselves in.
You've got high fertilizer costs, you've got high fuel costs. You've got commodity payments that are very low, so when they do go to market their product, the prices are low. And you factor all of these things in very, very clearly. There's a part of agriculture out there that really is stressed by all that in a real financial way.
Johanns says the toughest times are being felt by small and medium-sized farmers and ranchers. And he says he's sensitive to the reports he's heard about banks that are unwilling to extend operating credit to ag producers for another year.
I haven't seen any statistics here, but I've certainly heard anecdotal information that as farmers have sat down to renew their line of credit with the bank, that the bank has expressed concern and or in some cases said that they just don't see how they can renew the line of credit. So, you know, you've just really had some difficult situations here.
But Johanns says one thing farmers and ranchers won't have to worry about is any early congressional action on the 2007 Farm Bill. He says Congress will have other pressing business before it recesses for Labor Day next year. Then Johanns says members of Congress will be busy trying to keep their jobs.
They're going to try to get recessed as quickly as they can because 2006 is an election cycle. And they're going to want to be back in their states and districts. And so really, you're not going to get to a serious farm bill discussion until the first part of 2007. So I will guarantee you we're months away.
Meanwhile, President Bush is expected to give his State of the Union address on January 31st before a joint session of Congress and a national television audience. Expected to be part of the address is a call for additional energy policy initiatives, including more funding and support for renewable energy programs. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns has detailed the likely timetable for additional Canadian cattle and products coming into the U.S. Sometime in the spring to early summer, USDA will issue the proposed rule in the Federal Register. Johanns says barring litigation, the rule will likely be implemented in the latter part of 2006. Designated U.S. meat packers have been ordered by the Japanese Ministry of Health, Labor, and Food Safety Bureau to submit imports for a week, possibly longer, to post-customs clearance monitoring tests at a pair of government laboratories. The scientific aim of the week-long monitoring tests is seemingly to test for the presence of residues from antibiotics, fungus, hormones, and other things such as pesticides. U.S. and Canadian meat packers were annoyed by the absence of any advance notice of the tests, as well as the commercial cost of delaying the sale of the beef in the Japanese market. Japan's two mid-sized supermarket chains began selling U.S. beef today. Meanwhile, beef from Canada is also arriving in Japan. President of the Canadian Cattlemen's Association, Stan Eby, says the reopening of the Japanese market is another important step in Canada's BSE recovery effort.
We've actually increased our net export 3% of production this year. If we could get that kind of growth, yes, it would pretty well take care of it unless we had too much productivity growth on top of that herd growth.
The beef is being imported by a Japanese supermarket chain that operates more than 60 stores in Tokyo. The product will be featured at a Canadian beef fair in five of those stores today and tomorrow. Farmers have until the end of next June to sign up for a program that offers payments for farming activities that prevent carbon from entering the atmosphere. Farmers with continuous no-till and grasslands in Arkansas, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Missouri, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and Wisconsin can sign up for the program by contacting the Iowa Farm Bureau at area code 515-225-5431 or downloading forms at www.iowafarmbureau.com. Strong demand has meant producer profitability for most U.S. pork producers in 2005, but that profitability is expected to finally produce significant increases in domestic supply in the USDA quarterly hogs and pigs report due out tomorrow. University of Missouri livestock economist Dr. Glenn Grimes says he expects the U.S. breeding herd will post a 1.5% increase at least.
We're hoping we're wrong, but our data says that the breeding herd has grown some. We're guessing 1.5% up on the breeding herd, 0.2% up on the total herd and the market herd at a year earlier level. And we're going to be apprehensive if USDA shows a smaller breeding herd than that, because our gilt and sow slaughter data actually shows the potential for a little more growth in the breeding herd than 1.5%.
Pork exports have posted double-digit increases the last several years, and Grimes says there's an outside chance exports could absorb next year's anticipated pork production increase.
Not likely unless we can continue the growth that we've had the last couple of years. And that wouldn't seem likely, for we're talking about growth, you know, approaching 25% on average for the last 2 years. And we've actually increased our net export 3% of production this year. If we could get that kind of growth, yes, it would pretty well take care of it unless we had too much productivity growth on top of that herd growth.
Glenn Grimes has spent over 50 years studying hog markets and hog marketing. Researchers at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln say Nebraska's groundwater resources have steadily declined from 5 years of drought. The report shows large areas of Nebraska showing groundwater level declines up to 5 feet, in some areas corresponding to the heaviest concentrations of irrigation wells. Declines of up to 20 feet over the past 5 years are not uncommon. Only a few isolated areas of the state showed minimal rise in groundwater over the past 5 years. regardless of whether the Liberal or Conservative Party wins Canada's federal election on January 23rd. The use of biofuels, including ethanol and biodiesel, will increase by 5% by 2010. Both parties have announced that they intend to increase the use of renewable fuels. Currently, less than 1% of Canadian fuel is renewable. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Time through the ages has been adopted for many purposes. The Romans were known to change the calendar to keep a politician in office longer. Some calendars work off moon cycles, others don't. Todd Gleason files this report on the Gregorian calendar and how it is used to tell time.
U.S. Naval Observatory Master Clock. At the tone, Eastern Standard Time. 11 hours, 12 minutes, 25 seconds. Universal Time.
This is the official voice of time in the United States. It is the U.S. Naval Observatory Master Clock Announcer, a voice many radio and television stations depend upon. Well, the U.S. Naval Observatory's written mission includes determining the positions and motions of the Earth, Sun, Moon, planets, stars, and, well, other celestial objects, providing astronomical data determining precise time, measuring the Earth's rotation, and maintaining the master clock for the United States. The U.S. works off the Gregorian, or Christian, calendar, and our concept of a year, of time, is based on the Earth's motion around the sun. The time from one fixed point, such as the solstice or the equinox, to the next, is called a tropical year. Its length is about 365 days, but varies by a few minutes or hours. Our concept of a month is based on the moon's motion around the Earth, although this connection has been broken in the calendar we now use. The time from one new moon to the next is about 29 and a half days. So the moon cycles and our monthly Christian calendar don't quite coincide. It has years of 365 or 366 days, is divided into 12 months that have no relationship to the motion of the moon, and groups weeks in sets of 7 days. But today, a website called Calendars Through the Ages reports almost everyone takes the precision of our calendars for granted, unaware of the long threads spooling out from our clocks and watches backward in time, running through virtually every major revolution in human science. The thread, it says, runs largely through the West, since this is a source of the world's civic calendar, but also casts lines of varying sizes and thicknesses outward to China, India, Egypt, Arabia, and Mesopotamia. Unwinding backward, it pauses at Clavius and Bacon, at the rush of knowledge coming from Islam in the East during the Middle Ages, at bloody wars fought over dates after Rome's collapse, and at Rome itself, at its height, when Julius Caesar fell in love with Cleopatra, an affair that gave the West its calendar. Many different calendars have been developed over the millennia to help people organize their lives. According to a recent estimate, there are about 40 calendars used in the world today, particularly for determining religious dates. Most modern countries use the Gregorian or Christian calendar for their official activities. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
At the tone, Eastern Standard Time, 11 hours, 13 minutes, 10 seconds.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Ameren says it has submitted, formally requested the Illinois Commerce Commission to approve three separate electric rate increases for its IP, Silco, and CIPS customers effective 1 year from now. An Ameren news release says they're asking permission to bill customers for a delivery service charge that is separate from the overall power bill. The new charge would result in monthly increases of $7.08 for Ameren IP customers and $6.84 for Ameren Silco customers. For Ameren CIPS customers, the charge would be $5.19 a month outside the St. Louis Metro East area, but just 27 cents per month inside the Metro East. Health officials in Vermilion County, Illinois, say a sharp drop in syphilis cases there has left them cautiously optimistic. Vermilion County health officials say they only have one confirmed case of syphilis this year. Just 2 years ago, there were 21 reported cases, and last year saw 10 cases. Health Department Administrator Steve Laker says they're still worried that there might be unreported cases out there. Indianapolis Colts coach Tony Dungy will bury his 18-year-old son James this afternoon. Most Colts players and other NFL coaches and officials were among the hundreds of people who attended the funeral today in a suburb of Tampa, Florida. The Illinois Department of Public Health says it's hired a consultant to help the state get ready for a possible outbreak of influenza. Public health officials say such preparedness is needed because an influenza pandemic could kill thousands of people in Illinois. A spokesman for Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White says people who lie about being veterans to get military license plates are insulting those who have actually served their country. White plans to ask lawmakers to pass legislation making such lies a misdemeanor, punishable by a $1,000 fine. And the Canadian division of Illinois-based Kraft Food says it has agreed to sell some product lines in five factories to a group led by two private equity firms for an undisclosed sum. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
What has all the warm temperatures over the weekend done to the wheat crop out there, if anything?
Well, it hasn't been excessively warm, although certainly a little bit warmer than people would like to see with some 60s and lower 70s. But those are going to be tempered somewhat by some cooler temperatures coming on through. But not only in the wheat areas, but across all of the lower 48 states, even including Alaska, the trend has been warmer and will stay that way as we round out 2005 and head into 2006, as most areas will have temperatures a bit above normal.
Looks like there's a number of rain events headed across the Corn Belt this week.
There will be. Now, they're going to be quick-moving systems, especially the systems that are going to come as we head into tomorrow. Then as we come late in the weekend and early next week, a more potent system could be in the offing for the Midwest towards the middle of next week. But these systems coming through will deposit some rain, a little bit of snow, over most of the Corn Belt, especially the central and eastern areas.
Speaking of rain, it looks like, according to the map I'm looking at, Brazil got some good rain over the weekend.
They did, and more coming. Although we don't expect anything excessive, the next week will bring frequent chances of rain to Brazil. Argentina, a little bit drier. This rainfall and the cloudiness associated with it and the active weather pattern has led to temperatures for 2 weeks in a row now to be averaging a little bit below normal down in South America. And that trend is likely going to continue for another week.
Those southern places of South America, which are a little bit on the dry side, has this last set of showers helped them with their net drying issues or no?
In some areas, it is a little bit spotty. It's been a little bit of a help in some areas, but there are still some dry areas, especially in the eastern areas of Argentina.
What areas are you keeping an eye on globally?
Well, we just talked about one. Another area of interest is Australia, which is looking to see better chances of precipitation. We're expecting some pretty good moisture in northern, central, and west-central Australia in the next week or two. Going to be a little bit stormy there. In South Africa, while there will be rain in the forecast, amounts of precipitation over the next week will probably be a bit below normal.
The temperatures in Australia quite warm over the next week to 10 days, it looks
like. It is looking that way, although a little bit cooler as we head into next week.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central Time for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILL.UIUC.edu, click on AM on the left-hand side of the page, and then Agriculture on the right. This is Dave Dickey.